America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Look, the Yankees right now, I've diminished some of their wins in recent days, whether it's against the Cubs and just, but the offense isn't there, or, the late comeback wins against the Royals and Red Sox. But they really started to turn a corner, I think, maybe with the Judge Grand Slam. And now they're clicking on all cylinders, getting everything in place, giving guys rest, giving other guys looks, trying to figure out here as they start to pull away in the AL East from the Orioles. The Yankees are playing their best baseball now going into the postseason, and they deserve a ton of credit. I still can't go all in and believe that this is a team that's going to win. They could. I'm just not there yet. I have too many trust issues with the Yankees to say that they would be a World Series winning team.
I get that. I mean, listen, what I said when we started the show, it's been a very gratifying season so far from a Yankee perspective. Yeah, so the division, it's not quite a wrap, but it's almost there. You're up five. The run differential, for all the problems the Yankees have had, and there's been a lot. We've chronicled them like the Mets every single day here on the show and the station, but they are, plus 133? Next highest in the American League is plus 98. Think about that. For all the complaints that have been levied against this Yankees team, plus 133, and the next best is plus 98 in the American League. They're going to win 95 games. They're going to likely get a first-round bye. They did this for the first 3 months without Gerrit Cole. Obviously, Clark Schmidt, now, maybe the league would have figured him out a bit. I don't think so, because I think he's really good. But Clark Schmidt was en route to being an all-star, maybe the Yankees' best pitcher to start the season, slightly behind Luis Gil. And he missed a couple of months here. You had closer issues. Obviously, Aaron Judge did nothing the first month of the season. Volpe and his erratic ups and downs. All this stuff. You didn't have Jazz Chisholm, so they found a way to make an impactful trade. We didn't really quite know yet what Austin Wells could be, and I think now you've got your answer, and he's going to be a stud. So I think it's been a fun ride. I think it's been a season that has, I think, made the Yankees better and more battle-tested for October. I think they're better in terms of situational stuff. I do like the bullpen now, but you got to go out and you got to finish the job.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Even with me poking holes in the Yankees all year long, and by the way, like the Yankees from June on, we're barely a 500 team for an extended period. So it's not just, but even though they're winning, they weren't winning. They were a 500 team or below 500. It's been inconsistent, but now's the time to get it going. And they seem to be gelling at the right time going to the postseason. Like we said, Baltimore falling apart. And you look at the rest of the American League teams outside of Detroit, who's not even in the playoff picture at the moment. Nobody else is really, hot or posing a threat. The Yankees are going to end up with the best record in all likelihood, have that bye, win the division, and be as big a threat as anybody in the postseason, even though we watched a team that the majority of the year was not World Series-esque or certainly not even the regular seasons that they've had in years past. Doesn't mean it can't work out. A long way to go, but you should be happy if you're a Yankee fan with where they're at. But also, for me, I can't go all in and trust them and say this is going to be the year.
I'm not saying you're nuts. Yeah. But I wonder, and I don't even know if you can do this. I mean, I know you could try, but I think it's hard to do. How much of your lack of all-in belief with this Yankees team is somewhat rooted, even if it's unknowingly, from previous failures? Because I feel like a lot of people, unintentionally, I think it's almost unavoidable. I've done it as well. I think you almost, you can't separate it from, well, they couldn't do this a couple of years ago, and they never situationally hit, and they're reliant on the home run. I'm like, you know all the problems that have plagued the Yankees for a while.
Yeah, I don't think it's that, though, just because.
Not at all?
I mean, maybe there's a little part of it, but I wouldn't say it all. And here's why. Because a couple of years ago, when the Yankees started out, where everybody was comparing them to the 98 Yankees.
Yeah.
I know you and I weren't together.
Oh, God,
but we also,
no. We both said the same thing. Lunacy.
Well, it was lunacy. But they were winning games, but neither of us really believed in it. And it wasn't because of what they did prior. It was just because, I don't know, what we were seeing even when they were winning those games. And obviously we proved to be right. The second half of the year, they were nowhere near as good as they were in the first half. Postseason flame out after they beat the Guardians. And that was with Judge going nuts, obviously breaking a record. This year, I just feel like because in the beginning of the year, I did think it was different.
Me too.
Remember April, maybe we were talking about, maybe more specifically April, or even before they came home. It was like, wow, this looks and feels different. The Soto effect is real. And it's not just Soto. it's up and down the lineup. So, and you know, that was factoring in last year, but it didn't matter.
Volpe looked very different.
Different approach. I mean, Volpe looked different. Verdugo looked different. Yeah. The Soto effect. They looked, in April, I probably have tweets about it. We said it on the air, like, this is, but get me to October now. You wanted that Yankee team in October now. And then we went a long season, a long time through the summer where they weren't that Yankee team. I think they're starting to get back to that now, yeah, which is great because October's coming. I don't think my trust has to do more with the previous failures. It has more to do with this year's inconsistency.
Yeah, I believe you. I just think sometimes, maybe more with callers, whatever. I do think that seeps into the conversation. I think I've done it as well, maybe unintentionally, whatever. I think on some level it's unavoidable because you've watched, you know, when you talk about the Yankees, and this works either, you know, positively or negatively, and I've said this before, this one aspect of what I'm about to say, when the Yankees were humming, you know, even if you didn't fully believe in the Yankees team, you're like, that's the Yankees. They're going to figure things out. We're going to win the championship.
Right.
Like, you just had that. It wasn't cockiness. It was just the expectation that was rooted from past success that may not have been fully attributable to the team we were watching in real time, but because of the recent association of winning. And I think, conversely, the Yankees have not won since 2009, so it's easier to latch on to the failures because that's what's been more prominent. And I put quotes around failures because they still win a lot.
Right.
But we're talking championship.
Right, their failures are better than most other teams' success.
Yes.
I mean, it's just how it is with the Yankees. The one thing that I would say probably impacts my thoughts now that happened previously is Judge's struggles in the postseason. If not for Judge's struggles in the postseason, and what does that mean? I mean, look, you get it going at any point. It's not, can he play in the postseason? He just hasn't been on the level that he's been at in the regular season, which is the best player I've ever seen level.
Yeah.
He hasn't been that in the postseason. So until I see that, hard to believe in that. So maybe that's the only thing that I would draw from the past.
I will say one more thing. See, the Judge stuff. Now, again, you either do it or you don't. Reggie stepped up. Reggie did it. A-Rod eventually did it. You know, we know who did Tino, the Grand Slam. Mm-hmm. Derek always did it. Brosh just did it. We know who did it. We know who didn't. And so far, Judge hasn't done it. The difference, and this needs to play itself out, understandably, the difference for me with Aaron Judge, because they didn't make the playoffs a year ago, all right, and remember he got hurt, running into the wall. He was on pace for 50 more bombs, maybe the MVP, second. You know, would have finished second probably, but another massive season. I think since he last played in the playoffs, I just think Aaron Judge is a more refined hitter. I think he has changed his approach. I think, even going back to the Scherzer stuff that I referenced, those sliders a couple of years ago at City, where he was vulnerable, susceptible to the outer, like that kind of pitch, blow it away. Not that you never get a bad bite on a slider, he's human, but he's cleaned up that hole. I think that Aaron Judge now, again, he's got to do it, but it's just now he's a 315, 320 hitter.
Right.
He's not a 260 hitter who just hits bombs. And by the way, that's fine. You know, if you're a 260, like if Pete was hitting 260 this year and he had 47, 48 home runs like he usually does, it's going to be a little bit of a different perception. Judge is just a better all-around hitter. So eventually those guys, they pop through.
Going to break through in the postseason. The other thing we discussed has been the Jets. Jets getting underway tonight, starting week 3. Home opener. Rodgers referred to it as Jet Life Stadium. We all know what happened last time he set foot at Jet Life Stadium in a game that mattered. So this is going to be a big one tonight. I expect, BT, the party that we've been expecting for years to take place with Jets versus the Patriots here at MetLife Stadium. I expect that to take place tonight with Rodgers going nuts and the defense finally showing a dominant side. They've, you know, obviously week 1 was awful. Week 2, not very good. Week 3 tonight against Brissett and the Patriots, even though the Patriots have gotten better, I expect to see a dominant performance from the Jets.
I can't wait for this game, man. You know, it's been a long, long year. And I know the Jets have played 2 games here, but yeah, the symbolism in returning to the stadium, the side of where Rodgers went down 4 plays in, it's not lost on me. It's not lost on Jet fans here. Now, the stadium's gross, except at night. Like, MetLife
at night. I'm looking forward to it,
Looks good. The green, it pops visually on TV. Jet fans are going to be lathered up and ready to go. But they could also be 0-2. Like, let's not lose sight of, if Will Levis wasn't so sloppy, they're probably hunting win number 1 tonight.
God, now, if they lost this game.
Oh, God. You mean this game or last game?
No, if they lost this game.
Right. They're not losing this game.
Yeah.
They're not going to lose this game. I think tonight you're going to see a more explosive, more consistent. I think the playbook's evolving with Allen's emergence. Both running backs could catch. I think Mike Williams is starting to trust his knee a little bit more. I think Rodgers is starting to trust Mike Williams a little bit more. Garrett Wilson's a handful. Will McDonald's coming off a great game. And, you know, listen, I know offense. I'll leave the offensive line breakdown to Boldy and guys who played. I get it. But there's something to be said for a little cohesion. Five players have now been together for a bunch of snaps, so they should be better tonight. And Rodgers trusts his body a lot more. Now, his body's going to be sore because it's 3 games in 11 days and he's 40. But he's learned to trust his body. He had to scramble a little bit. He doesn't run for a first down, but he's navigated the pocket. I thought better in week two than week one. Hang 30 or hang high 20s on this team and rout the Patriots.
Yeah, and I can't wait, and I'm going to be there tonight, although...
You sure?
I'm not sure. No, I'm not. I'm not sure what time I'm going to get there anymore. I'm discouraged. I was so excited all day. Now everybody's rooting and saying I'm not going to get there in time. What was I thinking? I don't know what I was thinking, figuring that maybe going 8 miles in an hour would be possible, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case. So maybe I'll get there at half. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Mario was in Long Beach. What's up, Mario?
What's going on, guys?
How are you, Mario?
Yeah, good show as always. I'm really excited about the Jets. I'm a big-time Jet fan. I think they're going to do really good. Well, I think Malachi Curry, I think he's going to come. I think he's about ready to play.
I'm waiting for that.
Yeah, I want to make a point about the Yankees. First of all, Volpe, I think we're coming down a little hard on him. He batted 209 last year. He's up to 245. That's a 36-point improvement. So it takes a little time. He's only 23 years old. But
I think that's I'm going to let you respond for sure. I think that's a reasonable way of looking at it. I've said that as well, so we're kind of sharing the same thought. Here's what worries me. Number one, the fluctuations are too wild. And number two, if you're going to be a superstar, and let's face it, when you're a first-round pick, you're supposed to be a superstar. You don't go into year three not really knowing who he is yet. He's not a scrub. Everybody knows he's got value. But I think his ceiling is going to be a little lower than we hoped.
And by the way, while he improved in that average, it's not nearly enough if you're only hitting 11 homers or 12 homers, whatever he has. When you drop off in homers, you can't have that happen.
Yeah, but it's still a nice number. I mean, if he does another 36, then he's at 280 next year.
If Queen had some stones, it's a different arrangement in the family tree.
Yeah, and then maybe by some point it could actually get to 300 or...
Don't be like that. Even Dope's laughing at that.
That was a good line. Find out what he may be. I mean, is he going to be a power-hitting shortstop that plays great defense? Is he going to be a high-average guy? 249 is not a good average.
No.
I'm sorry. It would be a lot better if he hit 25. Like, if you were to tell me he had the same amount of homers this year as he did last year...
Yep.
And improve the average...
Oh, yeah.
Now we're working with something.
I agree.
You can't have the average raise... to 249, I might add, and have the homers significantly. The homers were cut in half.
I know, because you would think that, and he did change his approach. And listen, it's not easy. He's pretty much swung one way his entire life, even going back to Del Barton. I don't know about Little League, but I'm sure he hasn't deviated too much from that. But this year, he overhauled some stuff. So when you do that, and like there's less emphasis on power and more emphasis hitting the ball up the middle, going the other way, finding gaps, just doing things a little differently. You would think that, all right, well, if the power drops, then you're going to see an appreciable rise in average. We haven't.
Yeah.
It's risen, but not an appreciable.
OPS is worse.
It's worse?
Yeah. OPS last year, 666. This year, 659.
Ugh.
I mean, similar, but worse
right
now.
That's just not good.
Slugging last year, 383. This year, 367.
On base should be a little bit higher.
It is a little bit higher. Last year, it was 283. 280. 293 this year.
It's still not even 30%.
Average.
He's got a lot of work to do, man.
Average, we went over 245 this year versus 209 last year. Struck out 167 times last year. This year, 149.
Okay. I'd like to see him get that. If you get that down to about 120 or 130 next year,
again,
that's manageable.
Like, it's like he can't combine. The strikeouts were high last year, but the walks were better. The strikeouts are down this year, but the walks are worse. He had 52 walks a year ago. He's got 38 this year.
Yeah.
Stolen base is similar, 24 versus 26.
It's almost like where you see progress, then when you look for something else, it kind of offsets the progress by something else that dipped.
Ribby's similar. All right, fine.
Yeah.
Homer's, like we said, 21 a year ago. He's got 11.
He's got a lot of doubles. How many doubles? I know he's got more doubles.
27 doubles. Yeah, right, 23 a year ago.
I mean,
now
he's
in total, 148 hits. He only had 113 last
148
year.
Is a decent, but again, he plays every day.
Yeah.
Which is great, but I mean, it's not like he. I don't want to go nuts on 148 hits. He's got 10 games to go. See if he finishes, 155, 160. He's trending very slowly.
He played every day last year, too. He played 159 games last year. He had 113 hits. So this year's a significant improvement in that regard.
Yeah. No, listen, but I'm going to stick by what I said. He's got some he's got some plus attributes. He's got a ways to go.
Rich is calling from Springfield. What's up, Rich?
Hey, guys, listen. Sal, you know, I grew up in Kearney, which is, you know, right by the PATH trains. I drove to Meadowlands a million times. And if you're going to take the GPS, it's going to take the Turnpike, 280. It's going to be a mess. I give you some back roads to go, get you there a little faster. Mm. Whatever happens on Route 3, that I can't help you with because, you know, that's going to be crazy getting in there. But I could shave off a little bit of time, no traffic, and get you there some back roads.
How?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming Waze does that for everybody now, doesn't it, Rich?
They may not, you know? I mean, they may not.
Are you saying Richie in Springfield is better than Waze? Right now, you should create an app, Richie. I appreciate the help, but I mean...
To get from the PATH to the Meadowlands, I very well may be better.
Yeah, all right, I like it. I'm going to put you on hold, Rich, and you can tell Hoff because nobody wants to hear that on the air. And plus, I don't want anybody else hearing it because I want that to be my special route
exactly.
to the game.
If you hook it up, Sal, and you know, 5,000 people jump in, and it's kind of negates what you're doing for Sal.
Dude, I got to be honest with you. My whole mojo and mood is ruined.
I was excited
about it. Now I'm stressed about it.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to not be stressed and anxious is to just accept what I've gotten myself into. And know that I might not get there until the second quarter. It bothers me.
Yeah.
And because, like, I want to actually watch the game. If I'm not going to go, I need to see the game. I don't want to be in the car.
I know.
Although listening to it with Shusen does a great job.
Shusen's great.
Yeah, but, like, I want to go to the game. I'm going to the game. I've been planning this for weeks. I'm excited. Got good tickets. Got the parking hooked up. I thought it was going to work. Oh, God.
There is nothing. I might be neglecting, like, one thing that I'm not thinking of right now. But there's very few things in life that get me off my balance than being late. And you and I, based just out of necessity, what we do for a living, being late's not an option.
Yeah, you can't.
Like, if you're a lawyer, all right, and you got to be in the courtroom, you better be on time. But if you just go into a law firm or any other job, I mean, if you're 5-6 minutes late, not a big deal.
Right.
If you and I walk in at 10:07, show starts.
Yeah, I know. We're in trouble.
You know, going to games at St. John's, you going to SNY, me doing TV all these years. Like, you got to be somewhere. You got to go.
Right.
Going to baseball tournaments, you know, 91 miles away, and you plot this out. Like, my dad, this is a long time ago, my dad would always set the car clock 10 minutes ahead.
Right.
So when we get, say, if you know, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, we get in the car at 9:10, it's really 9. He would just do this, no phones, like this built-in cushion. He was a man of timing principle, and I'm the same way. And I teach it to my kids, and like that's why, even when, and I mean, God, I know we all go through this, and not the stereotype, but the wives, like when they make you wait in the car. And, like, the incessant trips back through the garage. I forgot this. I need water. I need my hairbrush. I need my purse. I need a sweater.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's 76 degrees.
Right.
Your daughter's got to go back. Me and Colt are in the car. We're ready to go in six minutes.
I can remember my father when we were younger beeping the horn. Or just even saying, where the hell is she? What is your mother doing?
Yeah, so, listen. Yep. I told him the other day. I swear to God, I looked in the backseat. I told him, I said, son, I said, we need them. And in a lot of ways, they're smarter than us. And we can't survive without them. But if you can't learn to deal with a woman and some of the things that annoy you, don't get married. And I said, you want to get married so you can have kids someday. I'm trying to teach them now.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll drive you nuts.
My father always would say, you sure you want to get married? You sure you want to get married? And I'm like, yeah. Like, come on, Dad. What do you mean?
You would actually say that to
you? Yeah. And now I know why. BT and Sal on the fan. We'll come back, take more of your calls. I'm trying to see. We'll have Jonathan Casillas coming up in a little bit. Also, we want to get into the Mets. We'll do that later on. And a little football note that has to do with the Giants, BT, that we'll get to as well. Eli Manning officially nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Eli, to me, and I've said this for many years, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. So now that he's actually first-year eligibility, nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I do believe he should get in. Whether he gets in or not, I have no idea. I don't know how it works in football as opposed to with baseball, where it takes even the best players a year or so, whatever.
You think he should get in first time? Because that's the only question about Eli. He's going to get in.
I don't know if that's... Are you sure about that?
I mean, eventually?
I think that there's some debate where people... You look at his regular season career, he's not a Hall of Famer. But you look at what he did in the postseason twice.
Sal. I mean, Giant fans have gotten mad at me about this for years. I've said what you just said. I believe that. Like, I think you can make... Well, because he's got the second one, there's really no case to be made for him not to get in.
Right.
But Eli Manning was never one of the best quarterbacks week to week in the NFL.
Well, he just wasn't. Right. Well, that's why I say...
He lost a lot. He threw a lot of picks. He was durable. He played very well when it mattered. but he had a lot of down seasons, led the league in picks a bunch of times. Like, let's not get it twisted. I mean, Eli Manning was not a superstar.
Well, that's why
not even close.
Yeah, that's why I say I'm not sure. Now, again, I don't know.
But he's going to get in.
Well, he should get
in. He's a Manning. You don't think that helps?
I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it does.
Well, he wouldn't have got. Do you think if he won one Super Bowl?
I don't know about that. The second one changes a lot, including for me.
Yeah, me too, because you could say the first one, I don't want to say fluky because that's so disrespectful, but you could say, wow, well, he went on one of the all-time great runs. He had an average. How would you rate his regular season, his career in his regular season?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
That's the best way for me to word A to F.
Yeah.
1 to 10, I'd say Eli's regular season career was about a 7.
Oh, I was going to go 6. Okay, so that's fair enough.
I could go 6.5, by the way. Okay. I mean, right in that neighborhood, but I wouldn't go as low as 6.
Right, and then in the postseason, it was a 10, obviously, twice. So if you...
Well, I don't know if it was a 10.
Yeah.
I just say that. Now, the result was a 10. I say it wasn't necessarily a 10 because that defense was also carrying the mail.
Right.
I mean, now...
But he
didn't have these gaudy... You know what I mean?
I get it. But as a quarterback in the postseason, going on those runs, I'm not even just talking about in the Super Bowls themselves. I'm talking about those runs.
A lot of road games.
I mean, Eli Manning is as good a postseason quarterback as I've ever seen in my life. End of story. In the regular season, a little above average, had some good moments,
obviously had some bad, but
nothing special about
Eli. Who's not better than Joe Montana in the postseason?
For me, I didn't watch Joe Montana.
Yeah, I could probably make a case for a few others, but your point is well taken. He stepped up big time.
Like think about this. Because Brady, like you said, well, Sal, Brady's like, okay, well, Eli beat Brady twice.
Yep.
And not only that, Brady was a great quarterback in the regular season who was also great in the postseason.
But also, Brady's first Super Bowl against the Rams, he was kind of along for the ride. Very pedestrian.
Yeah, that's true, too.
I mean, so,
but
you know.
Eli raised his game.
No question.
In the postseason, going on... Like, and even with Brady, it got to a point where you expected the Patriots, obviously, to win. Now, it's not a knock on him. It's just the reality of the situation. Eli went on two of the most incredible runs that I've ever seen. And that's why in the first one, it's like, wow. I mean, that was an incredible run. It'll never happen again. And then he did it again.
I know.
Which makes it was not a fluke. It was not an accident. It was Eli Manning in the postseason is as dangerous as we've seen.
And the first one was all road wins. Remember, he went down to Tampa. Then in the second one, they were out in Dallas and then Green Bay. I mean, so, you know, road, Super Bowl champ. Yeah, he's going to get in, no question. First timer, he doesn't feel like a first timer, but we'll see.
Yeah, all right. Well, right now we're joined by Jonathan Casillas, who, of course, does the Giants pre- and post games right now on the radio. Unfortunately, you know, it's after another loss again with this team, Jonathan, where you see the Giants struggling 0-2 going into Cleveland. What'd you see from... I thought it was a significant improvement, though, from week one to week two. Brutal loss. What did you see first glance at the Giants here in week two?
Well, I agree with you on one side of the ball. I think there was an improvement definitely on offense. I think Daniel Jones played a lot better. He looked a lot more comfortable. Malik Nabers, we all kind of knew what he was, but I think he put, you know, everybody in the league on notice that he is that guy. Unfortunate drop at the end, but, you know, we have a short-term memory when you win. So if the Giants can win and he can get another catch like that, because he will be in that situation again, something similar, he can make us all forget about it. But the defense, that was my thing. Giving up 215 rushing yards on the ground, you know, Shane Bowen's defense is, you know, his defense is known for not giving up, you know, 100-yard rushers in the red zone. And, yes, red zone held up, you know, 100%, 0 for 7, whatever it was, for the Commanders in the red zone. But that rushing yardage, man, that is not good at all. But then I watched Drew Phillips. Guys, I don't know, besides Dexter Lawrence, who else is playing at a high level on defense like Drew Phillips, bro. He played an outstanding, not even just the last game, the first 2 weeks, this kid's been playing some good football, man. So some stuff I want to, you know, things they got to correct, but there's some promise there. It's a lot better than I felt after the Vikings lost, for sure.
Yeah, overall, Jonathan, I was with you. I mean, look, they're 0-2, and I know people made a big deal about the kicker. I'm kind of over that by now. We can look ahead to the Browns in a second here. And I'm with you with Phillips. He looks like an absolute beast. Why, though, do you think? Like, the defense was okay not allowing a touchdown, but why couldn't they get the Washington football team to punt? What was the issue with the Giants' defense not being able to get the ball back to their offense?
Well, I think, number one, they were getting out physical. You know, Washington had it in their mind that they're going to, you know, run the ball, and that's what they did. And the Giants couldn't do anything about it. So they got out physical. They got hit in the mouth right away. They really didn't respond. I saw some split back stuff and some single back stuff from the Commanders that puts a defense into a single gap spacing, meaning every single person has a gap. And, you know, some young guys, they may have been a little late or out of position, and the Commanders exposed them in the run game. And that was basically it. I didn't really see too many guys getting, like destroyed or manhandled. It was more like a misfit, a little late, a bad angle here. And I think those are all things that can be corrected.
Yeah.
Which is good, you know, but at the same time, it still happened. And Cleveland, you know, they're going to run the ball. Like, they're looking at that film like, oh, yeah, we're gonna be able to do anything we want to those guys. Because if you can run the football, you can basically do anything you want
on
offense.
Yeah, even though Deshaun Watson's a mess, I hear it's going to open up some passing lanes. John, think of us with us, BT and Sal every week. Of course, he is in the Giants radio booth, pre- and post-game show. Does a great job with us all season. A bigger picture before we actually get into the Browns, some other stuff here. You know, whether it's Dable, whether it's other coaches in the past, when a coach is, whether it's right or wrong, is on the hot seat and asked questions so pointedly in a press conference after week two, how does that, if it does, trickle into the locker room for the players?
Well, I think, you know, most teams, you know, especially teams that, you know, have had their coach for a significant amount of time, you know, teams kind of, you know, take on and embody their head coach's personality. You know, and you know, when you're winning games, you know, you can almost not talk however you want, but they give you a little bit more grace, a little bit more leeway. The leash is, you know, pretty much out there like it
Belichick.
Was in 2022.
Like Belichick. He can say whatever he wants.
Right.
And no, I got you. Keep going. Yep.
And then people just go along with it. But, you know, when you're losing games, people want answers. People want answers when you're losing games. And there's questions that need to be answered. You know, so it's kind of, you know, and I talked to you guys last week about how it was comical listening to some of the post-game interviews, because it's kind of what I'm saying. It's like they're embodying what Daboll is, and it's difficult because you kind of got to answer some questions. You know, when you're losing, you got to answer some questions. So you can't keep deflecting. You know, you have to be straight up. And, you know, New York media, they're Jordan Renan and those guys, they're asking those questions that you don't want to get asked. You know, that's like, if I had a list of questions I don't want to get asked, Jordan Renan and those guys, they're going to ask those questions. First questions you're going to get are those questions. So you got to understand where you're at. This is New York. You know, New York media is, they're not the like, oh, it's so much. It's like, no, they're going to ask those tough questions because the people want to hear the answers to them.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Dable has handled the early pressure well?
Say that one more time.
Do you think the Dables handled the early pressure well?
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
We're going to have to see, you know, because it's still early, and you're asking about early pressure, so we're still kind of in it right now, but the team has to respond, you know. The team has to, I would say, defend their coach, you know, because y'all have to play better.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Daboll is going to defend you guys as much as he can, but you can't just keep putting, you know, like the Vikings was a bad loss. People, I think, overanalyzed it because it was the Vikings, and I got my hands in quotations and Sam Darnold, which y'all just saw what they did to San Fran. I think they might be a little bit better than people think, you know, and then you can't lose to the Commanders. And it's like, I get that too, but the Giants got to figure out how to win games. So the questions, they slow down a little bit, and they're given a little bit more grace, because if the head coach is going to continue to do that, that has to go hand in hand with winning. Because I don't think that's a winning formula to handle media and you're not winning games.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking with Jonathan Casillas, does pre and post for the Giants. Great guy to have on to talk about all things Giants. All right, well, you talk about winning games. Nothing they can do about it now. They've lost the first two, but they do head to Cleveland here. You know, significant underdog on the road in Cleveland. We know about Cleveland's defense, although they've been sloppy the first couple of games as well. Just overall, Deshaun Watson, all of that. How, Jonathan, is it possible for the Giants to go into Cleveland? What do they need to do to go into Cleveland and come out with a dub?
Well, I think offensively, keep improving, you know, not turning the ball over. I think the offensive line, they, you know, they've improved from the first week to the second week. And if they can continue to do that and, you know, continue to, you know, distribute the ball, because I think that was one thing I took from the offense. They didn't distribute the ball that well. I think it was only four players that actually had a reception in the game, if I'm not mistaken. And I think they got to get a little bit more diverse in how they distribute the football. And then defensively, man, y'all got to be more physical. You know, y'all got to be able to establish that, hey, y'all not running the football on us. You know, and they have the pieces to do it. You know, I'm not looking at a team, you look at their defensive roster, I'm not looking at a team that's like, hey, they don't have the guys on defense to slow down a rushing attack like the Cleveland Browns. Or like, you know, the Commanders or whoever in the league, they do have the guys. People have to understand how to play with Dexter Lawrence, right? When Damon Snacks Harrison, when he got to the Giants, I've never played with anybody like him. Like, he was a dominant force. He was averaging like 80-something tackles at defensive tackle, which is insane. I had to learn how to play with that dude. It took some games, but when you have a guy that dominant, you have to. It takes a little while to learn how to play with guys like that. And I think that's the reason why you're seeing not as much production as we thought from certain guys that we might have thought that was going to be leading the team right now in whatever it is, pressures or sacks or whatever the case is, because they have to understand how to play with Dexter, because Dexter is doing things that nobody else in the league is doing right now.
Okay.
You know, so I think they will figure it out. I got my fingers crossed when I'm saying that, because I hope they do, because I got a lot of respect for a lot of guys on that defensive unit.
So, I mean, I can't answer this. When does the, and it's not an excuse, it's more context on your part, and I appreciate it, but when does that context evaporate? Like, when do they need to get used to playing with him by before it's a problem?
2 weeks ago?
I got you. You know what I mean, you know?
I don't know, man. They got to do it in a hurry, because, you know, I don't think the offense is dynamic enough to bail the defense out.
Yep.
You know, like last week, you know, it's only giving up, you know, field goals. All right, offense, let's get enough points to beat a team that can't score a touchdown. You know, but unless they figure out how to play complementary football, meaning the defense can be allowed to glue together, you know, new defensive coordinator, some new pieces here and there, you know, but it's like, do you really have that much time? And I say that much time. Spagnuolo's defense, right, for the Chiefs. He used to be the D coordinator for the Giants back in 07. He was my defensive coordinator back in 15, 16, and 17. It took us a little while to catch on to Spags' defense. In 2007, they got smoked twice to open up the year. I don't know, 100 points scored in the defense. But they believe, they bought in, it took a little while to do it, but eventually it happens. They can't fault in their belief. They have to be steadfast and believe in each other, believe in Shane Bowen, what Shane Bowen doing, and they will improve if they have that mentality. I don't know how long. I'm hoping it happens in Cleveland this weekend.
You think, Jonathan, this is a well-coached football team?
I think so. I think there has been mistakes throughout, whether it was coaching, players, you know, performance-wise, on the field, whatever it is. And it's still a young team. You know, the Giants have a young roster, one of the youngest in the league. You know, so I expect there to be mistakes, but I also expect for you to learn from your mistakes, you know, as all adults should do. You know, so I don't like to repeat mistakes from any player or coach, you know, and that needs to be improved, or, you know, it's going to be a struggle this year. They have to improve on, you know, in every aspect of it, you know, the coaching, the players, you know, personnel-wise, you have to keep improving, because there's other teams around the league that kind of got those things figured out already.
I think that's fair. I really do. Final thing for me, Jonathan Casillas, BT and Sal on the Fan. So, granted, small sample for the Giants, but also a small sample from the rest of the NFC East here. Is it maybe not quite as potent as we thought coming in on paper? What do you see in the division?
What, NFC East, you're saying?
Yeah, just the East, yep.
Well, I mean, we're last in the division after 2 weeks, so I don't, you know what I mean? Like, we're fighting now from behind. We're already behind.
Yeah, but Dallas doesn't look as good. You know, like, the other teams maybe don't look as good as I thought. That's really why I'm curious. Not that the Giants are playing well. They're not. But are the other teams as good as we thought?
Maybe, maybe not. You know, it's still early. You know what I mean? It's only 2 weeks in. You see a lot of things happen in the first month of the season. I think teams don't really hit their stride until, like, midway through the season. And with how everything is with the preseason nowadays, that's basically like now we're starting the season because you got your two preseasons out of the way. Now let's go ahead and put it on there. It sucks that you're counting the games, but if you really think about it, when I play guys, we, and I say we, as a starter, you played at least four quarters of football in the preseason. At least you're playing three quarters in that third preseason and at least one quarter either in the second or the first preseason game. Now these guys are getting 10 plays. I don't know how they're ready to play football.
Now, some teams are ready.
Around the league.
Hey, some teams are ready.
I agree with that. Minnesota looked ready
from
the first pass of the game. Well, I guess the first pass was a sack, but
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they looked early week one. They looked good week one.
Saints look ready.
And yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. But most teams, though, I think they're still trying to figure out what they are.
Okay. All right, man.
Jonathan, you think Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer, surefire Hall of Famer?
Yes, I just don't know if it's first ballot. You know, I think because there's arguments out there against, you know, him making it to the Hall of Fame, I think that's why he's not going to be first ballot. But, of course, I believe he should be in the Hall of Fame. I'm not even really looking at the numbers per se, because if you do that, I'm sure there are guys that made it back in the 70s and 80s that don't deserve to be in there if you're going straight on the numbers.
Oh, there's no doubt. And I'll tell you what, and I'm not talking about Eli here, there's other guys just based on sheer statistical accumulation. And actually, this does apply a little bit to Eli, where you play for a long time, you have great durability, you look up, you got a million yards, you got a million touchdowns, but were you truly a superstar? Yeah Eli, nobody's. If anybody doubts that Eli's going to eventually get in, they're nuts. I'm with you. I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Listen, week to week, Jonathan, back in the day, you know, I could ramble off 7, 8, 9, 10 quarterbacks who were simply better. Simple.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, but there is a such thing as a body of work that you cannot take from Eli. You know, the body of work that he put together in his 16-year career, you know, playing basically not missing a game for the entire time. He got benched. I was a part of that. I hated that I was a part of it. I hated that I had to watch that back in 2017.
In Oakland, right? Against the Raiders.
Oh man, it was not a good look right there. But you know, his body of work is a Hall of Fame career. You know what I mean? Like some guys play Hall of Fame careers in 8 to 10 years, like Aaron Donald just did. Aaron Donald played a Hall of Fame career in 10 years. You know, but you get a guy that, you know, doesn't have quite the numbers as Aaron Donald over 8 years, then he doesn't get considered. But the longer your career is, the better you are, and you don't have to be the best. But the longer you are really good or even great, the longer you are that, I think the more possibility for you to make it and to leave your mark on the league like Eli has done. There's no question that Eli has left a mark in the league.
A gentleman, I mean, durable, champion, no doubt.
But man of the year, I mean, come on.
Man of the year, absolutely. I'll tell you one thing, though, and I think another good example of this, as you talk about the Hall of Fame stuff, is my boy Tiki. I mean, now, Tiki, and I've talked to him about this a million times because I'm close with Tiki. I worked with him for 10 years. People don't always believe this, but I'm telling you, it's the truth. He doesn't care that he missed the championship. He doesn't care that he retired early. Tiki just has other interests, and it makes him a unique person. But if Tiki would have hung around another year or two, he's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I actually think that Tiki, I know it's a different position, Tiki at his apex was just simply better than Eli at his apex. And I don't even think it's close. Tiki was one of the best players in the league. Eli was not.
I agree with that. Tiki Barber was phenomenal.
Yeah.
For like a two or three-year span, he averaged like 2,000 yards all-purpose.
He's a beast.
Year. And once he figured out that fumble problem that he had early in his career, man, he was playing football. But talked about the shorter career.
Well, I think we're losing Jonathan. All right, but that does.
He's running back.
Yeah,
you know, like depends.
At the risk of getting in trouble again, just pot it down, Dove, and say goodbye to Jonathan. I think we have a bad connection there. Jonathan, we love you. I'm not hanging up on you. We appreciate the time. Bad phone line, but we're about to wrap it up anyway. The one thing that I will say, though, is you can't, like, Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. Now, whether Tiki gets in or not, that's a different conversation.
He's going to get in, I think, eventually.
But, which would be great. I don't think comparing the two is fair. Eli,
I know it's not. Well, one's a quarterback, one's a running back, obviously.
No, I know, but even saying, like, Tiki was better at his position than Eli was at his.
I don't even think he's close.
No, but Eli, you can't eliminate the two postseason runs.
No, I understand that. But
with those runs, then how could you say that?
Well, I understand your pushback. I do. But, like, to me, you know, Tiki had his, again, apex Tiki, top tier, prime, stud, super stud Tiki. Wasn't that far behind Barry Sanders?
Right.
I mean, Eli was never like Mahomes or Steve Young or Joe Montana. I mean, come on.
I'd rather just Tiki's a Hall of Famer or Tiki isn't a Hall of Famer as opposed to Tiki versus Eli because I think it diminishes.
I'm not trying to pit them against each other. I'm not trying to make it personal.
I get it, but you guys are both saying,
they've already been there, by the way.
Yeah, well, I get it. Right.
They rectified that. I'm not trying to drum it back up.
But putting, you know, Tiki saying he's better than Eli, I can't say that because I saw with my own eyes, as pedestrian as Eli was in his regular season career, what he did in the postseason is second to none.
I don't know if it's second to none. That's a little hyperbolic.
To me. How's it
second
hyperbolic?
To none?
He went on two of the more incredible runs.
Look at
runs.
Joe Montana. He's 4-0.
Understood, but those were great 49ers teams. Eli went on two runs
that
Tiki
played on a lot of bad Giant teams.
Understood.
You want to incorporate that aspect now.
But what Eli did was take average Giant teams.
No, Eli had an awesome offensive line and a great defensive line.
What was the record?
Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, what was the record?
If Eli played better, they wouldn't have won nine games.
Understood, but
come on. What do you think Tom Brady would have won with that
but
team?
But that's a different
argument.
Dan
Marino.
In the postseason.
Or Phil Sims.
In the postseason. Again, this is facts. This is not even opinion. In the postseason, Eli Manning went on two of the most incredible runs in the history of the NFL.
I'm not going to push back on that because I wouldn't even try. You're factually right, but I also don't. I want to stop there because I want to make it seem like I'm disrespecting Eli. Absolute Hall of Famer. I think that was my way to elevate Tiki, not denigrate Eli.
BT and Sal on the Fan will come back, have some of your calls. We got to get into the Mets as well, and there is some news with the Mets that we'll get. The Tiki-Eli stuff, people are going to want to call and talk about this. Like, I just don't like pitting the two together. Either Tiki, and by the way, we both are in agreement that both are Hall of Famers, right? I mean, I'm assuming you agree that Tiki should be in. You just basically said that.
Yes, but I think that Tiki was a better player.
You see, that's where I don't know if I can go there.
I mean, I don't know what you want me to tell you.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
that's fine. That's fine.
Tiki was, but let me simplify it this way. And if you don't agree, that's fine. And yeah. I understand it's not trying to pit them against each other. To me, it's really contextualizing both careers. To me, for 3-4 years, Tiki was one of the best players in the league.
Yeah.
Period. Eli was never close.
Right.
Never.
Right. I get that.
That's all I'm saying.
I know, but I also, like, it's selective because we're just going based off of regular seasons, which is the majority of the time.
It's 16 games.
Understood. But Eli went on to, like, if Eli went on one Super Bowl run, I think we could have that argument. The fact that he did it twice, like.
Well, I'm not saying Tiki's the more important Giant. Eli's the more important Giant.
How were they ranked again? I forget. In the top 100. Tiki was what?
12, maybe.
Okay,
Tiki?
Right around there. And where was Eli?
Hoff,
maybe you can get that for us. I'm just curious.
And I feel like Eli was, I don't know, let's see, it was a couple of older guys. Yeah. Lawrence Taylor, obviously. I think Eli was 7. I could be off on that. 6 or 7-ish.
Right.
You know, but let's also not make it seem like, and I'm trying to find it here, the first year. Like, okay, so what was the first year of the Giants? Was that 07? Hold on. Calendar year 07? I think it was. All right, so. Yeah, so the first game to start his run, remember I said they won in Tampa, they won in Dallas, they won in Green Bay, and then they beat the Pats. The first game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, let's just see what Eli did. I mean, it's like he's going out there for 388 yards, dude.
Right.
All right, so that's the first game. I remember the second game, and I'm going to look this up, but I remember it was the low-scoring game, but I think they may have been losing at the half to Dallas, and then I think Romo threw a pick. Could be off on the Romo pick, but Eli, the second game, threw 183 yards.
I know, I get it, but
it's
just in clutch spots. But he made big plays and led them. For clarification, Tiki was 14, Eli was 8, Carl Banks was 17. Chris is calling from Bayshore. What's up, Chris?
Chris,
yeah, hi guys. Listen, I got to weigh in on the Eli Tiki. Yeah, you with me?
Yes, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
Barely, wake up.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's okay. Yeah, no, I agree with Sal on this one. I think you got to weigh the quarterback position a little bit. I think they're both Hall of Famers, like you mentioned, but Tiki was a better giant,
Go hang up, Sal. I didn't say that. Well,
I'm sorry, I didn't. You didn't say that. It's okay.
I definitely didn't say that. I said that Eli's definitely the much more important New York Giant. What I'm saying, because quarterback's got two championships, I'm saying, just like Phil's more important than Bavaro, who was a really good tight end, or even an outstanding offense. I mean, you're the quarterback, you win a championship. Same with Hostetler, you got to go up the ranks. What I'm saying very clearly is this. If Tiki, now you had Sean Alexander 1 year wins the MVP, LaDainian Tomlinson. I'm just thinking like the stud running backs during that period. I mean, Tiki, 1 year he may have been number one, may have been number two. I mean, Eli, number seven, number eight, number 11, number 12. That's all I'm saying in terms of quarterbacks. So it all started what I said based on the position, not the value to the franchise. Big difference there. I'm making that distinction. No, I'm not an idiot. He's the quarterback. Eli was not nearly as high on the quarterback list amongst his peers as Tiki was. How anybody disagrees with that is beyond me.
Tony is in Deer Park. What's up, Tony?
What's up, guys? Before I say my point, can I just ask you a quick question? If Phil Simms plays and wins Super Bowl 25, is he a Hall of Famer?
He might be. You know, he might be. He might be.
All right. Now, my point is, everybody, you know, I think we all agree Eli's a Hall of Famer, Tiki's a Hall of Famer. It should have been done already with Tiki, if you ask me. But Eli now, I think he's a first ballot for sure.
Why?
Listen, well, I think the Iron Man thing, I think that's bigger than people even say. Look at how many quarterbacks can't stay healthy. Look at what the Giants went through last year, the Jets. I think he was there every game. His stats are better than people think. He's a top 10 quarterback history in so many stats.
Tony,
I understand the record.
Tony.
Yeah, come on.
Come on, what?
So, you're telling me. He's a first ballot. And I think the list of all the players, I think he gets in.
Let me ask you this, Tony.
Oh, I'm sorry, I hung up on him. We get a break here. I have not looked at the list. Have you seen it? And that really matter of the other players that are eligible?
I've seen the list.
Okay,
I think it's actually very weak.
But what does that have to do with Eli? Like, wouldn't in the NFL? Don't it's not
Vinatieri's up, Luke Kuechly's up, linebacker. Those are the three headliners for the first timers. It's actually pretty weak.
No, I'm saying, geez, like I feel like Luke Kuechly was playing yesterday. I mean, I guess Eli too.
Eli was playing yesterday to an extent.
I know, I get it, but it was he played for so long.
I know.
And you go back a long time ago now. Anyway, does that impact, like in baseball, you could only vote for a certain amount of guys or whatever? That's not the case in the NFL, right?
Football's so messed up. It's so convoluted. Basically, you've got to, Tiki's explained this a few times. You have the initial list, and then they narrow it down to the semifinal list. I mean, Ron, they went through this, obviously. Yeah. And then once you get to a certain point, you've got somebody vouch for you. And it's shrouded in secrecy. It's a very weird process. So somebody basically has to be your champion. And I believe it's at the – is it at the Super Bowl? I think it is where you
– like a former player?
No. Well, it could be a writer. It could be a writer. You get in a room and you basically try to – you sell the player that it could be a writer, it could be a former – it could be a broadcaster, it could be a team executive, whomever your champion is. And you basically try to convince the rest of the room – why so-and-so's a Hall of Famer.
I mean, Eli...
Very odd. They've got to modernize that. It's weird.
Two-time Super Bowl champ. I mean, the Pro Bowls I can't get into.
But Eli?
I'm just saying in general. It'd be nice if he had an MVP. He doesn't,
Was he even close?
Well, that's
an important question.
Where would you find that out?
I know the answer is no. I've had this conversation a million times.
Oh, yeah, the awards thing.
How many Pro Bowls? How many Pro Bowls, by the way?
Four.
Okay. And how many years did he play?
He played a lot.
16, 20. Years, all right, so 25% of the time he was a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, anyway.
I mean, come on.
So two-time Super Bowl champ, two-time Super Bowl MVP, Walter Payton, Man of the Year.
He was an amazing person and a clutch player. Yeah.
He played every day. He won two Super Bowls. I mean, to me, he's just a Hall of Famer.
It's my least favorite conversation.
I don't get caught up in first ballot. Like, if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. It shouldn't be, well, you're a Hall of Famer, but you have to wait a couple years to get in.
But that's what it's become.
Man,
I'm with you.
Stupid.
I agree with you, Sal. But it's become that. Yeah. So that's why we almost have to have, or don't have to, but that's why you wind up having this conversation. Because it's got, once Harold Baines and Bijou, who was a lot better than Harold Baines, and players like that, it changed how we view the process and the pecking order of true Hall of Fame status. And Eli's going to get there. Tiki's going to get there. I mean, listen, we all watched Eli. Let's not recreate the script. He was amazingly clutch, and he was incredibly frustrating.
BT and Sal on the fan. We'll have more of your calls on the other side. We'll get into the Mets as well. Well, I mean, what do you mean?
Missing nothing.
Two Super Bowls. We talked about that.
I said that.
Yeah.
Clutch.
We got it.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.